Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to On Driven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Alan and Hugh. On tonight's program, we'll be talking to Michael, who originally comes from Canada. He will talk about life in Canada, his family life, and coping with growing up in a one-parent family. Michael will always let us know why he came to Australia and what it's like to have a freezing Christmas in Canada. Once again, we have a great show coming up on Driven, so stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Orange Ribbon. This is Alan Smales. I'm with Hugh with me tonight. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, Alan.
We're not going to do a traditional Christmas program tonight, although we might touch a little bit on Christmas a little bit later in the program. We should also point out your speak.
Yeah, I'm a bit rusty tonight. Yeah, I've got this horrible. I don't know what it is.
You've been sick a couple of times.
I know. I can't get rid of this, and it's affecting my voice. So I've got this sexy voice for Christmas.
So if you hear Hugh gradually fading away over the next hour, the reason is that he's losing his voice.
My voice isn't breaking up.
Anyway, let's move on. We've got an interesting story tonight.
We have, and our guest tonight is Michael from Canada. Welcome, Michael, to Orange Ribbon.
Hello.
Michael, let's go straight into your story. You know, tell us exactly where you come from.
Oh, where do I start? Well, I am from Toronto, Ontario, born and bred. I lived there for most of my young adult life. I came to Australia the first time when I was 14 because my father remarried when I was very, very young, but for the most part I lived there until I was 26.
Okay. Now, you said you were brought up in Ontario. Now, were you brought up with your mum and dad and siblings? Or?
That's an interesting story. I was raised sort of a single-parent family for a little while.
When you say single-parent, sorry to interrupt you, but was it your mother or your father?
It was my father. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He raised my sister and I on his own, because he divorced when I was only two, so I was very
So your mum
young.
And dad divorced and you lived with your father?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you remember that at the time, or were you too young to really know anything?
I was too young, yeah.
So it really wasn't an issue in your mind at that time?
That's correct. They actually separated before I was two, so really I was about a year when they separated.
Because usually children will stay with the mother. And the father, you know, has visiting rights, or you visit him. You know, why did you stay with your father?
And that's a fair question, and I do get that question a lot.
A lot, okay.
Because, no, I agree with you, it is unusual. I guess not as unusual now as it might have been then, but look, at the time, my mother wasn't doing very well. She was suffering from mental disorder and suffering from schizophrenia, but at the time that wasn't understood because that was in the that would have been the early 70s. So
when you say it wasn't understood, what do you mean by that?
I'm just saying the medical community was still coming to terms with it. And,
right.
They had a knowledge of the disease, but it wasn't. The treatments were still very experimental, and she wasn't coping very well, and she was sort of in and out of hospital a lot, and it was having an impact on just on the whole situation. Dad was struggling a lot, and I was obviously too young to understand any of it. But
how old you got one sister?
Yep.
How old was your sister when this was?
Well, she was 7 years older than me, so she actually would have witnessed a lot more of it. She would have been eight at the time. Yeah.
Did you see? I know your parents separated when you were two, I think it was.
Yeah.
At a later stage, did you see this schizophrenia, and what was your impression of it?
I was completely sheltered from it. Actually, Dad was very, very protective, and I actually didn't meet my mother until much later age. I was actually 12. And by that time, when I did meet her, she was, you know, they'd come up with the right treatments, and she was on all the right medications, and she was fine. And so when I did meet her, it was great. It was lovely, actually.
How did you feel at 12 for the first time meeting your mother?
Oh, a million different emotions. As a child, I was naturally curious about it, but again, Dad was very protective and didn't want to talk about it, and the conversations were always very one-sided, and he'd shut the conversations down. And I think he was obviously with my best interests at heart, because he'd borne the brunt of it, and I think my sister had borne the brunt of it, so he wanted to protect me. And so I understood that, and I think even as a child I understood it, but I still wanted to meet her. And eventually that, I guess when he felt assured that she was stable and she was fine, then he said, you know, that's fine, you can meet her. And so I did, and I was very excited, and I couldn't believe it. And when we met, it was, we sort of became friends straight away. And then she's, even though I didn't really see her as a mother figure because she didn't raise me, she sort of became an aunt, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if I can ask this question, I mean, you can tell me to shut up. But what did your father say to you about your mother? I mean, for 12 years, you hadn't met her. So what reason did your father give you?
How was it explained?
Yeah, I'm trying to just. It's a long time ago. I'm not showing my age now, but I think he sort of say to me, you know, she's not well, and it's just not, it wouldn't be good for your mother to meet you at this point.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be able to handle it.
Right.
And he always assured me that she has nothing against you. It's nothing to do with you. It's just the situation.
Right.
It's something that she can't help. And obviously he put it to me in child-friendly terms, and obviously he did a good job because I accepted that. Yeah.
Now, when you finally met at what, 12, did you say?
I was 12.
12.
Yep.
Do you remember that particular meeting?
Clear as a bell.
Yes. What were your emotions before and leading up to? What were you feeling? What were your fears?
I was apprehensive, but I was also very excited. And I did feel quite positive there because, again, Dad had... He had sussed out the situation. He was very careful about it. He made sure that she was okay, and he'd seen her a few times before, and they'd had quite a few lengthy discussions. And my mother was very nervous too, and she had to work up a bit of courage. So, but by the time we did meet, I felt pretty confident that it was going to be all right.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Now, your sister, how did she react to all this?
Different situation. I really felt for my sister at the time because, like I said to you, she would have witnessed my mother's illness, and I didn't. So she was happy for me, and she wanted me to meet her, and I think was just as protective as Dad was. So,
Because your sister remembered your mother.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
And she had been seeing her even when they did separate. By the time I met my mother, because my sister is close to 8 years older than me, she'd already sort of grown up, and when she was 19, she moved out, or 18, she went to out west to Edmonton, Alberta, and lived out there with her partner. So I was sort of, she didn't come with me, if that's what you're asking. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, your father remarried, didn't he? So.
Yeah, he did. He remarried when I was 11 to a woman that he was teaching with. He's an English teacher, and so was she. And they were friends for quite a long time. She was getting divorced herself, so the timing is right in that respect. They were both sort of single, but again, they were just friends for the first couple of years, but then it became closer, and yeah.
Now, we've discussed with people at different times situations where there has been a divorce in the family, where the children have moved on with one of the parents who've remarried, and they've ended up with a new stepfather or stepmother,
right,
where they have experienced the previous parent, birth parent, for years before.
Right.
In your case, this is different. How did you treat your new stepmother?
It was a very different scenario because, I was too young to have had a relationship with my biological mother. So at this, she was around since I was probably 3, and not all the time. It was slow at first, and she'd just sort of come over on weekends and visit. But she was a part of my life from a very early age. So she slowly but surely she became a mother figure to me anyway.
And so it's not like she sort of burst onto the scene a month or two's notice. Sort of.
Yeah, so if anything, I didn't go through any of those traumas.
You actually told me that you were a bit of a problem child.
A little bit, yeah. Friends of mine would find that very hard to believe because, I've been accused of being way too rule-bound and sounded a bit like that. But look, at the time, I think I was, in retrospect, because things were difficult just for my father, and he was raising two children. Financially, it was, you know, one income. He was paying off a mortgage. And so he didn't, even though I knew he loved me, he didn't really have the time for me. I think it was, and I don't blame him for that now, looking back in retrospect. But as a child, you know, you don't think that way. And fact was, I was probably not getting as much attention as I should have. And so, and the fact that I didn't have a mother, you know, growing up in those formative years, and, you know, Dad was always working very hard, and so that, I think that really had an impact on me. So I wasn't doing very well at school, and I rebelled, and, you know, I was quite bad, actually, and I'd leave the school grounds and cut school, and this is all before 58.
Did you get into fights?
I used to get into fights.
But was all of this to do with the fact, do you think, looking back now, the fact that you didn't have the traditional mother role at home like all your peers would have done?
I haven't really thought about that as such, but I think that I wouldn't say it had everything to do with it, but I think it certainly played a part. And I think if Dad didn't have to, you know, if he wasn't having to work and take care of all these other things, perhaps it could have been a little bit different, but he didn't have the time, so I was on my own a lot. And I think the other thing that I might need to say at this point is that my sister was not doing so well herself because of what she saw with my mother. So I think Dad was having to sort of pay a lot more attention to her.
Right.
And so that had an impact. And I think later when Dad, he became closer and closer to my stepmother, and they eventually married when I was 11, that provided a lot of stability for me.
So once they got married, your life became a little bit easier?
Look, even before they were married, because they were getting more and more serious, and there was, you know, she was around a lot more, and sort of partially living with him, and I think that made a difference.
So you felt a little bit more secure?
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is Orange Ribbon. You're with Alan and Hugh, and our guest on the program tonight is Michael.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Joy 94.9. This is Orange Ribbon, and our guest tonight is Michael from Ontario, Canada. Michael, what was the music we just played? You picked it.
I better turn you on.
Yes. Okay.
Turned on now?
I'm turned on, yeah.
You're turned on.
That's not what I was going to say about the song. Let It Rain is a Canadian artist, Amanda Marshall. She was really big in the early to mid-90s, which is when I was, you know, still living in Canada, of course. Significant, I guess. I was going to just say to you, because I think it's a great song.
Okay.
But there is a bit more significance in that two of my very close friends, who are still close friends to this day, Mara and Tal, and she used to play gigs at the pub where they worked.
Okay.
And they told me about her and got me into her singing and said she's going to be really big, and sure enough, she became quite huge in Canada, and I think she had some minor hits here, but I don't know. But her voice is just incredible, and she used to just stop the whole pub.
So Moira and
Mara, yes.
Mara and
Tal.
Tal.
Yeah.
Are they listening tonight?
If they can somehow find the website and listen to it from home, then
they might be.
Yeah,
you never
perhaps.
Know.
But
people all over the world listen to it.
But I'll tell them to listen to the podcast or something. Yeah, definitely.
Now,
my radio debut.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a radio virgin.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we were playing the music, we were talking about your early life in Canada.
Yes.
And you got up to the point where your father remarried and you stopped becoming a problem child.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, I'm hoping I'm not sounding too doom and gloom like on Christmas Eve, but it did, my life did get very much more stable, and I started doing very well at school. And I will say this about teachers, if you get a good teacher in primary school, that can make a difference.
Yeah.
And my grade 5 teacher in particular, the timing just really worked that year.
Right.
I remember it because that's when Dad remarried, and then I had this incredible teacher, and she was on exchange from England. She was teaching in Canada, and she just inspired me. You know, she just
life turned around.
Believed in me, and it was fantastic. You know, this is in primary school.
What about religion? Was religion part of your home life?
It was a big part of my home life. I would go to church every Sunday. I think my grandparents had a lot to do with it. They were quite influential in that regard, so I went until I was 18. Yeah, okay. Yeah, every week.
Right. I actually went until I was 23.
Oh, so you got me beat.
Yeah, I'm better than you. Now, at what age, Michael, did you realize that you were gay?
I think when I was 14, I knew deep inside, but I refused to acknowledge it in the usual hoopla, you know, so I just wanted to be, you know, fit in and, you know, the usual human need, fit into society, and
So
I fought it off, yeah, and I had a couple of girlfriends, total disasters, but one wanted to marry me, and that would have been a complete disaster, but
I had one of those too, where when we were both 21, where our birthdays were very close together, and her mother organised a joint 21st birthday party because she assumed that we were going to announce an engagement that night at the party, and I was having none of that.
How embarrassing. So, tell me, what age did you actually decide, oh yeah, I'm gay?
I would have been 17, yeah, 17, and I realised it, and I, not just inwardly, but outwardly, I just wanted to start to express it and come out to people, and my first boyfriend, I was 17.
So who did you come out to?
Mara, actually, she was, she was, no, actually, no, was it Mara? No, I think it was Tal, and then it was Mara, and then Mara told me off for not telling her first.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because I remember she told me off.
So your friends had an argument about you being gay?
Well, just an argument about, you know, who was the better friend, because I didn't tell Mara first.
A little bit of history for those of us in Australia. In Australia, it varies from state to state, obviously, in terms of the clearance of homosexuality is... In acceptance of homosexuality from a legal point of view. What's the status? What was the status in Canada? Do you know?
At that time when I came out, it was they didn't have the marriage option, and that's relatively
recent.
You're
talking about the gay marriage.
The gay marriage, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But look, aside from that, it was pretty open. Yeah, it was pretty easy to come out. I think
legally, what age could you be gay? Could you have gay sex?
I think it was 16, but don't quote me. I'm not sure. So maybe I was doing something illegal. I don't know.
I think we all might have
done that. Yeah. No,
so don't broadcast this in Canada.
No. When did you tell your parents?
Quite soon after, but I did hold it in for a little while. I decided to do that, you know, that rather than being direct, I was passive about it, which I suppose, I don't know if that was better or worse, but, you know, I'd leave hints, you know, like newspapers around, you know, in gay magazines, and I was doing volunteer work as well for various gay organizations, and I think, you know, so I was leaving pamphlets all around the house, and then they'd say, oh, you know, that looks like a good cause, what's that cause for, and, you know, it'll get back to gay rights.
So tell me, how long did it take for your father to say, are you gay?
He asked me at dinner, just the two of us at the table, I remember, and he just kept going on about this volunteer work I was doing, and I knew he was leading up to it, and finally he just said, well, so you're telling me about all these people you've met, and then you're telling me about these friends at school that are gay, and does that mean you're gay? And I said, oh, perhaps. You know, just... and then, but it didn't take long. Like, the conversation opened up, and I just said, yeah, I think I am dad.
Did it help that your father was a teacher?
I think it did help enormously, actually, because, like I said to you, he was an English teacher. My stepmother was an English teacher at the same school, and their department head, who they respected greatly, and I think this helped my cause a lot. Mm-hmm. And he was openly gay, and
their boss.
Yes, okay. And he would often come over for parties and things like that, and he'd bring his partner of 20 years over, and he's openly gay. And I think because of that you know, that they already felt quite comfortable with it, and so I really shouldn't be taking what I had with my parents for granted, because certainly friends of mine at school that did come out to their parents, my first boyfriend did, and their parents did not cope very well with it, and he was thrown out. So, yeah, that was very sad. But so I certainly shouldn't take what I had with them for granted at all. Yeah.
So let's talk about when you went to uni. Now, you told me you went a little bit wild-ish.
Did I tell you that? I don't remember telling you that.
You said you had...
I never get wild, no.
you lived on campus.
Yeah, I lived on campus. That was probably a mistake in hindsight because I was living in a student accommodation, and it was, it was my first time away from home, and everyone was partying, and it was hard to do any study. Mm. And so I think I got caught up into that. And
was there a lot of gays in the campus?
Not in this village accommodation I was in, or at least no one that was open. It was a very macho sort of culture there.
Okay.
So I think that was part of the problem as well. So I only stayed there for a semester, and then I moved out into an apartment with some people I knew from high school.
Right.
That were that had this apartment, they had a room. So
was this the time that you had the freedom and could sort of go out and enjoy yourself and explore the gay scene?
Absolutely, and I think my second year in particular, because I met some gay people on campus that became friends, and then one friend in particular, Mike, his name was me, and he introduced me to the heavy-duty party lifestyle, in a big way. So that was good for me, I think. I think I needed to do that.
Okay. Yeah. This is Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon with Alan and Hugh tonight, and our guest tonight, all the way from Canada, or at least originally, is Michael. And Michael, you've chosen the music for tonight, and there's something funny about this person as well. It's got the same name, surname, George Michael.
He does.
What's the relevance?
The relevance of this song is, well, I've always liked George Michael, and I think his talent has continued for a long, long time.
He keeps getting himself in trouble with the police, though.
He does get a bit naughty, yes.
Did you think of your youth, does it, when you were in trouble?
Not quite that sort of youthful experience, I don't think. Anyway, no. But that song is just... well, that's really dedicated to my partner, David, because I guess when I met him 4.5 years ago, that song was out, and I don't know, I just think, for the most part, those lyrics are quite significant in how I felt at the time and about him. And
David's sitting at home now thinking, oh my God, the present I've got's not good enough now, is it?
Yeah, he's under pressure. No, I think he's done well. He's been very busy Christmas shopping. But I don't know if he's even listening to this. He said he might listen to the podcast later because he's over at Friends tonight, and I'll be joining him later for Christmas Eve dinner.
That's good.
But he said if they get a chance, then... They'll listen. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's very nice of him.
Hmm.
Stop his drinking to listen to the show.
Yeah, well, he can do both. Multitasking.
Let's get back to the show. Now, we were talking about, very briefly, we were talking about Canada, and you joined the Gay Youth Toronto.
Yes.
What's Gay Youth Toronto?
It was a support group at the time, and I think it's still around. It was Lesbian Gay Youth of Toronto, and it was open to... approximately 18 to 25-year-olds, and people that are just coming out or haven't been out for very long, or even just people that need some support and want to meet people new to Toronto, new to the city. And I think that was a great organization for me to join because I made a few friends there, and one of which I'm still close friends with to this day, and that's Michael, who I was telling you about before.
Right.
And he was living in Toronto on work experience, but just so happened he was going to the university that I was going to. Right. This is after I just finished my first year, and he said, "Oh, you know, we should hook up when you're back on campus." So, so we did, and that was great. And so we explored the gay scene together, and in my university town, which was about an hour away from Toronto.
Now, you started a serious relationship around about this time, didn't you?
It would have been probably after I graduated, so it would have been 2 years later. Yeah.
Right.
I was in my first serious relationship, and that went on for a year and a half.
How did your parents feel about, or did they know about the serious relationship?
They did. By this time, I was very open with them, and they actually liked him. I don't think they liked any of my previous boyfriends, but they liked him. They thought he was...
What was wrong with the previous?
Well, they were insane, mainly.
So,
would be a good word to describe it, yes.
Okay. Well, this is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon and me croaking away here.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
I'm in Tribune with Alan and Hugh, and our guest in the studio tonight is Michael, and that's another one of yours, Michael.
Yes, it is.
What's the background to that one?
That is one of my very, very favourite Canadian artists, Sarah McLachlan. She's had some hits here, but this is her Christmas album, and I bought it last year, and it's just, that's a cover of John Lennon's song that she performed, and yeah, I just think it's
right. Actually quite good.
Yeah.
She sound, the name sounds Scottish, doesn't it? Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan, yeah.
Very Scottish.
But the choir that you heard in the background, it's the children's choir that she ensembled, and she works with disadvantaged youth.
Okay.
And so they're all, yeah, from...
Excellent. Yeah. Let's get back to your story. Now, we spoke about Canada, but let's move on to when you came to Australia, because you actually came to Australia when you were 14, because... your stepmother is Australian.
She's Australian, yeah. So we came here for a year. I went to school in Sydney for a year while my parents took a year off from teaching and travelled Australia and travelled Europe, and I stayed with relatives.
Okay.
So and
they dumped you, basically.
Yeah, basically. In a nice way.
In a nice way.
And they'd visit me often, but... that was a very good experience, and then we came back to Canada, and I think that just planted a seed, and, you know,
right.
I just always wanted to come back, and I visited several times, and just loved the country. And
so at what age did you actually, you didn't actually come to Australia first, did you?
No,
went to New Zealand.
I went to New Zealand, and I taught there for a couple of years, because I just finished my qualification, so... And I think because I went to New Zealand, it was just a little bit easier in the sense that I didn't have to, my application didn't sit under hundreds and hundreds of others, you know, because New Zealanders can just come and live in Australia.
Mm.
So I had to go through the same process, bureaucratic process, but I didn't have to wait for so long for processing.
But your stepmother, sorry, being Australian, could you apply for a visa based on her?
No, because at this point I was too old. If I was a dependent, that would have been all right, but because I was in my 20s already, I was just another person off the street that just said, hey, I want to come and live in Australia. You know, what do I do? Here are the forms, fill them out and get all the paperwork and the certified documents and everything else.
Right. So when you first came to Australia, where did you go?
Where did I go? When I first came to Australia, I lived in Sydney for 18 months, and I was just doing casual teaching, contract teaching there. Sydney is one, I don't want to bag Sydney, but...
But you prefer Melbourne.
Yeah, look, I loved it as a tourist, but yeah, and actually living there is different, and I'd come to Melbourne just to check it out, and my contract was finishing at that particular school, and I just thought, I'll see what Melbourne's like, and sure enough, I came down for a weekend, and I met someone while I was down here, and that sort of helped, and I kind of had a long-distance relationship for a little while, and then when I came to Melbourne, I knew someone, and we were together for a little while. That didn't work out, but that's fine, but I think it just gave me that buffer, you know?
It's funny you say, you went to Sydney, but... When you came to Melbourne, you preferred Melbourne, because I have the same feeling. I came to Melbourne first, but I've been to all the different cities in Australia, but I think Melbourne's the best city.
I love Melbourne. I love the city. It's just, I think every city has a different feel and a different sort of soul, and I'm not knocking Sydney for what it is, and obviously it's just not for me. It depends on your personality, but I just like the usual cliches you hear, but it's true, like just the cafe society, the culture, the arts community, but it's more just the practicalities of it as well, the traffic and all the one-way streets and pace of Sydney is just unreal.
But what about the gay scene between the two cities? Which city would you prefer?
Look, I mean, to be fair, I wasn't really in the gay scene that much in Sydney, but from what I saw, it was, again, my limited experience of it, it just seemed, again, very fast. The drug culture seemed rampant, and obviously it's like that in Melbourne to to a point as well. But when I was single in Melbourne, I didn't really notice it that much. However, you know, I have been in a relationship for a while. I haven't really been out in the scene so much, but so it is hard for me to really comment nowadays. But but at the time, you know, it just seemed...
Is there some way that you can pair cities in Australia with cities in Canada, in terms of feel?
I would definitely compare Melbourne to Toronto.
Toronto, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. David, I think David feels this way as well, my partner, because we went to Canada about, it's almost 2 years ago now, I can't believe it's already been that long, but, you know, he noticed a real similarity. But it can also be like Sydney, it's funny. Yeah.
But is there a Sydney in Canada?
Okay, well, I think Canadians would argue that... would probably argue with me on that one. They would probably say that Vancouver is a bit more like Melbourne and it's a bit more laid back in that sense, and that Toronto's more the, you know, Sydney. It's just faster. Yeah. And like I said, to me it's sort of a mix of the two, really. Yeah, Sydney and Melbourne, Toronto. It reminds me of both. Yeah.
How do you feel living... Because this is one of the things I find really difficult when I came to Australia. I come from Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Come Christmas, like Christmas Eve, it's 26 or something outside. In Scotland, it's usually minus 10 by this time, and it's dark, and it's still sunny.
Miserable and horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, Canada, what's it like in Canada?
Oh, it's
Christmas
the same
Eve?
Problem, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I left, and believe it or not, it may seem shallow, but it's the weather, and people often say to me, well, why did you leave Canada? You know, it's such a beautiful country. And it's like, well, you know, it is a beautiful country, but again, you know, you're looking at it from a tourist point of view, and... in reality, in the winter, it's bloody cold, and you know it gets to minus 20, and you know you have to scrape the ice off your windshield to get to before you drive anywhere, and there's salt on the road so that your tires get some grip, and then that affects your car and rusts your car out eventually, and I don't know, like just things like that, and I really still to this day I don't take for granted the fact that I don't have to deal with snow and ice, and that it doesn't get dark at 4 o'clock and freezing, and Dave and I were talking about this the other day, and that. I had a job when I was an office job in my early 20s, and I would take the train in the morning, get there at 8:30, and it was dark. And it was underground tunnel train, and then be in a little glass coffin-like building, and then leave and on the train and then get home, and it was pitch black.
Yeah.
This is, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Yeah. I must admit, when I go to Scotland, I really forget. I forget that it's so cold and... going out in the morning, and my sister always gives me a loan of her car on the basis that I take her to work, and getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning and it's minus 6 and the windscreen's frozen and you're scraping
ice. That's right.
It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, I always remember going back a few years ago, I had a Chinese friend of mine who had been living in Melbourne, but through his work ended up with a 6-month contract in Montreal. And I can remember when he came back telling me it was so incredibly cold. He just couldn't, he couldn't cope. He said he went through a winter in Montreal, and he said it was awful. It was, he was cold. He said he was shivering the entire time.
Oh, I know. Look, I'll never forget when we took some relatives. This is when I was only 12, and we took them to Niagara Falls, and Australian relatives, and this big blokey guy, you know, we said to him, you might want to put more than just that jumper on, you know, it's quite cold. And he said, no, I'll be right. And then so we're walking towards the falls, and it's one of those very windy days. It wasn't even December, it was the end of November. And it would have been probably zero, but the winds and the wind chill and the dampness, and then before you know it, you know, he's this big man, he's crossed his arms, and he said in his big voice, he goes, Jesus Christ, it's cold. Never forget that.
Yeah.
That image will always stay in my head.
You told me your partner, David, wants to go and live in Canada.
No, not live full time, but he loves the idea of certainly going back regularly.
Right.
And he would, I think eventually he would certainly entertain the idea of maybe living there part of the time.
Would you? Am I going to start an argument here?
We played this conversation many times with David. We haven't argued about it. It's just, I don't know how I feel. I love Australia, but I think, you know, when I get older, I might feel differently, and yet my parents certainly did it for a long time. You know, they'd get the best of both worlds. They would live in Canada for the summer, and when it was winter, they'd come to Australia, and then when it was Australian winter, they'd go back. And so if we're in a position, you know, in the future, if that's something I would want to do, then sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
But How long have you been in Australia now?
I've been in Australia since 1999.
Okay.
Yeah, so a long time now.
So you're pretty well settled.
Really. Yeah, I'm very settled. But not to say that, you know, I still think about Canada, and it's not that I don't miss it. There's a part of me that still misses it. And I think, especially this time of year, I think when it's Christmas, and, you know, I remember back to my childhood and having the snow at Christmas and all that. You know, and it is part of who I am, and I am a Canadian still, and I'm also Australian, and I've got dual citizenship, and so that... I'll always feel that, and so...
Does it snow at Christmas in Australia? In Canada, sorry?
A lot of the time it does, although with the climate change that we've been having, the weather is not as predictable as
although
it was.
Although it depends on where you are, presumably.
And it does depend where you are.
Yeah.
But certainly my childhood, most of the time, it would snow.
And we see if you're in some place like Calgary or somewhere like that, I assume...
It's guaranteed.
Because I was brought up in a village outside Edinburgh and in the central belt of Scotland. It never snows at Christmas. So everybody in Australia thinks, oh, it must be so nice to go to Scotland and have a white Christmas. You never have a white Christmas.
Yeah, so you just get a...
It's cold, but it's usually quite sunny.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So,
cold and weather aside, what is the most obvious difference to you between Christmas and its celebration and the activities around it between Canada and Australia? Is there something that's obviously different that you noticed?
Just that it's really hot on Christmas Day, yeah. But aside from that, it's so similar. Yeah, it's the same. You know, it's the same usual mad rush. It's the tree. It's the decorations. It's the presents. It's the, you know, the marketing mania. And you know, it's the same thing.
What about New Year? I mean, is there a difference between Canada and Australia at New Year?
Say that again. Sorry, is there?
At New Year.
So the music came on, so it's all right.
A little bit of Christmas in the background.
That's okay, that's lovely.
At New Year, is there a difference between Australia and Canada, or do you celebrate similar?
Oh, very similar, yeah. It's people make a big deal out of it. Most people, you know, what are you doing New Year's? It's that pressure. You should be going out. Why are you staying home? You know, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah, but people really get into it.
Okay, so New Year's Eve, do you go out at New Year's Eve? Because it'll be freezing.
People do. People do it.
And do you have fireworks and everything outside?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even though it's probably minus 20.
Yeah, get rugged up and go out.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I think that's us for another week, Alan.
Yes, that's Orange Ribbon for another week, and we've got one more week. You and I get stuck with both Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve.
We got the short straw, but next week's going to be great because we're going to look at the
retrospect from 2008. Yeah.
I would like to thank Michael for your story tonight. Thank you very much, Michael, for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And coming up next on Joy is Xmas Eve with Steve.
Xmas Eve with Steve.
Yeah, and I was told not to say Christmas. It's Xmas Eve with Steve. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks to Nick on reception, and Merry Christmas, Nick, and for your help. And from Alan and myself, a very Merry Christmas to you, the listener. We hope Santa is really good to you tonight. Next week, we have a special show, and we're going to look at 2008 and Orange Ribbon. Have a nice Christmas and bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.